The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, once upon a time, someone asked, when's a good time to be mindful? And the answer was when it's the best alternative. When it's the best option. One of the phenomena that happens as we start practicing mindfulness, we start discovering that it's often the best option, and it becomes the better option the more we practice it. And part of the reason for that is as we're practicing mindfulness, we start seeing what our mind stream is doing. And sometimes, occasionally, our mind stream is not that high quality. It's not doing something that's, it might even be harmful, it might even be a drag, what goes on in there. The topics, the concerns, the attitudes. And in those circumstances, mindfulness is a better option. And what mindfulness does is it kind of interrupts the freedom of our kind of unhealthy mind streams from just perpetuating themselves freely. Which if we're not mindful, they can do. And if the unhealthy mind's ruminations and thoughts and ideas go freely, they actually reinforce themselves. They become stronger and stronger. But to be mindful is considered to always be helpful, always be a wholesome, beneficial thing for the mind to do, because it's a way of, to some degree, stepping out of that mind stream and seeing it. And the more clarity we see, oh, that's not a cool way of thinking. The more clarity that is, without judgment and criticism, just, oh, look at that. That's not cool. We're interrupting that mind stream to some degree. We're stepping out of it for a moment. And then, as we do so, you ask the question, what's the best time to be mindful? I think it's right now. Because it's the better alternative, it's a better option. Sometimes we're thinking about something that's not necessarily harmful for us or for others, but we've thought it 10,000 times. And maybe mindfulness is a better option. And as we step into that, out of the mind stream into mindfulness, we start discovering over time that there's something else available to us that's not just simply redirecting the mind stream. Like for me, I do redirect mind sometimes. I'll be thinking about something, and I say, you know, this is not useful to think about, or, you know, I'm going to give a talk later in the day, and I start thinking about, I don't know, something nothing related to the talk, and it's not such a nice, it's not bad thoughts, but it's kind of, I don't know, ridiculous thoughts. And I said, you know, I think I'm better off thinking about what to talk about when I come to IMC. And so my mind goes there for a while, and that seems better. So sometimes you can redirect the mind. And I'll often do that in the course of the day. And it isn't repressing anything. It isn't, Pollyannish to think something else. It just seems like very matter-of-fact and straightforward. And of course I would do that, choose the better option. But as the mindfulness becomes stronger, there's something else that's possible to discover. And that is there's all kinds of wonderful states, wonderful capacities or qualities inside that can arise that are nothing to do with our mind stream, what we're thinking about and concerned with. That there's these wonderful inner qualities that bubble up, almost as if mindfulness makes space for it. That you can't have space for it if you keep thinking. And you might have a habit of having the most beautiful, noble, and inspiring, and healthy thoughts that anybody's ever had in the history of humanity. And you have a real record of really doing it all day long. And you're just proud and engaged and inspired by what you're thinking about, and you just want to keep thinking it. So please do, if you want. However, you're constantly filling the space with those thoughts, and so there's no inner space for something else to arise, to develop. And as we get a sense that mindfulness makes a space for something beautiful to happen within us, the question, when is the best time to be mindful, takes a whole different, there's more evidence, there's more understanding. Oh, now's the best time, because even the most beautiful thoughts of, I mean, this is going to be the great American novel, or you know, whatever. Well, it might be, but there's even better things, more wonderful things. And there's qualities and capacities we have inside that are, you know, when they become strong, some people might want to describe them as divine. And maybe that's what the Buddha did when he called five particular states that we have inside Indriya, named after the Indian god Indra. And so of Indra, so of God or heavenly or something. And you don't get a sense of this kind of divine association with these five qualities that are your own personal qualities that you have in the usual English translation of these, which is called the five faculties. So five faculties seems nice, but isn't that kind of bland? Oh yeah, I have five faculties, you know. You know, but if you have five divinities within, I mean, like what, you know, some of you might be now alarmed or running because, but anyway, these five divine qualities, like what's that? And these five are also sometimes called five strengths, something you also don't get from the word faculties. And the difference between these two words, the indriya and the powers, the bala, is just linguistic, according to the Buddha. It's not, they're the same thing. And so these divine qualities are also wonderful strengths or powers that we can carry within us. So what are these? So let me, before I kind of name them, for those, some, many of you know what they are, I want to continue this analogy with the mindfulness. So as we're mindful, we discover what our mind stream is up to. And sometimes we see it's up to something unhealthy for us, something not so beneficial, maybe even harmful for ourselves. Sometimes it's just a waste of time. And sometimes it's actually wonderful to do. And the thoughts, the concerns, the questions we have, they're inspiring. We're inspired by it. It's really healthy. And to see those clearly, those options, gives us a chance to choose which of those options we pursue. And it makes a difference. If you see those three options in front of you, you know, like you see three foods in front of you, one's poisonous, one is tasteless, and one just is so satisfying dish. Like just like, maybe it's just like your the favorite mother's dish growing up or something that represents parental love or something. It nourishes you in so many more ways than just with food because of the love that you associate with it. So poison, bland, or this food that conveys love, what would you choose? Well, you know, I think not so many people would choose the poison. But the love thing, and when we choose the love food, the food that is associated with kind of maternal or paternal care or grandmotherly care or something, then something different happens within us, something inspiring, something nice, something, oh, this was good. I feel I remember something wonderful from my childhood. And to this day, I still remember when I have toast with cheese on it. I remember my grandmother and her love. It's like, wow. And so the same thing can happen internally as we see the smorgasbord of different mind states, different thought streams that we have inside. If you see that you're just always kind of in a complaining mind state, that's kind of like getting into the territory of poison, actually. If you're always filled with hate and hostile and you're kind of full of resentment, you might not want to believe this, but it is a kind of poison for our hearts or our minds. If you're constantly greedy, it's kind of a poison. to be caught up in that. It does, all these things do negative things to our hearts, our minds, our body. Generosity, love, wisdom, kindness, they do a whole different thing. And some of these positive states can really feed us in wonderful, good ways. And it's for our benefit. So as we do the mindfulness practice, we start seeing the range of possibilities of what our mind can be up to at any given time. And first it happens maybe in meditation. In meditation, you start seeing, you know, you start thinking about, I don't know what, you know, could be lottery tickets. And you're kind of like trying to guess, trying to calculate, you know, what are the most likely numbers to win the lottery this next time? And what are the lucky numbers? And it, in a 40-minute meditation, after 20 minutes, you realize you have 20 minutes I've been thinking about lottery numbers. And it finally dawns on you, what a waste of time. I don't think I'll do that anymore. Let me switch and just focus on my breathing. And you focus on your breathing, and it feels good and relaxing. And by the time the next 20 minutes are over, you feel settled and relaxed and quiet. And, wow, that's so much better to have done that rather than spend all 40 minutes of the meditation thinking about numbers, lottery numbers. So maybe that's a silly example, but I think meditators, as they meditate, start seeing what kind of thinking is not useful to do. Sometimes they discover that there's no good thinking in meditation. They have much better things to do than keep thinking. Just let the mind get quiet and calm. And so in meditation, we start making choices. What we pick up, what we perpetuate, and what we put down. And after a while, we develop some confidence, not only that we can do that, but some confidence that there are better choices than spending the whole meditation guessing lottery numbers, or whatever it might be that we spin off in. There are better choices. And we start having confidence in that, so that it's not after 20 minutes we switch gears, it might be after a few minutes we switch gears. I know something better. Not only do we have confidence in it, we're actually inspired. I'm inspired by the other possibility of meditating, of these other states of minds that can happen, these other directions we can go into. And so after a while, there gets, because of familiarity with the territory of meditation, not only is there confidence, there's trust in a different thing that we do. Some people, without thinking about it, trust resentment, trust complaining, trust grumbling, all kinds of things, because that's what the mind does most of the time. But we come to meditation, we start seeing that the usual mind streams we live in are not so useful. And so we start trusting putting them down and trusting something else. And after a while, we become inspired by this. How lucky I am that I have this practice that allows me to change the mind stream or do something else. To have a practice that seems to settle the mind down to some degree and I have access to something else. We might even say we start having faith in this potential and this possibility. And over time, this sense of faith or confidence in this becomes stronger and stronger until it becomes a thing. It becomes divine. It becomes a strength that we have. And it makes a huge difference to have this confidence in the practice. Because sometimes practice is hard to do. Sometimes our mind streams are very challenging. And there's all the lawyers of the mind that will argue that against it. You have to kind of, you know, plan revenge. That you're required to as a human being, aren't you? You deserve it, or you have a right to it, or whatever. But you have so much confidence in what can happen when we don't get caught in these unhealthy mind streams, that the faith and the confidence will override the lawyers and will choose the healthy direction. So this confidence, this faith that we have in the practice can get stronger and stronger and stronger, and it becomes something that feels really inspiring and wonderful to have it. And maybe it's divine in a certain kind of way. As we start seeing more clearly the choices the mind can make, then we put effort into doing so. And that effort of choosing the healthy mind streams or the healthy states of mind or choosing mindfulness, it does involve some kind of effort. It involves choice. As we repeatedly make that effort, even like the effort to sit down to meditate day after day, as we sit and meditate, the effort to return to the breathing, at some point that effort factor gets strong. At some point that effort factor and the mindfulness together starts giving rise to a certain kind of vitality that begins carrying us along. Some people would call it chi, this kind of inner vitality that's there. And some of you, probably kind of an ordinary place to feel that, maybe for some of us, is if you start a new exercise practice, you know, maybe bicycling or running or something, and at first it's really hard and the body screams and says stop. But as you do it and get into it and get conditioned, sometimes you start feeling this wonderful vitality and joy in doing the exercise for a while until you get tired or something. But, there's kind of something kicks in, a vitality. And when you stop doing it, at the end of the exercise, the vitality remains for a while. It's really great. So the same thing can happen with mental practice of mindfulness, that there's a vitality that gets unleashed, that gets opened or released or awoken. And that vitality is called virya in Pali. And then there's, as we practice mindfulness, mindfulness is one of the things we choose to keep doing. We see the mind gets distracted and we come back and are mindful again. Over time, that capacity to be aware becomes second nature. It's almost like we're strengthening a muscle and you just stay aware. Some of you maybe have had this experience. If you do a good session of meditation at home or here, and then you, for the next few minutes after the meditation, or maybe longer than that, you kind of feel like you're kind of like really here. You're really here. You kind of notice you feel fresh. It feels like you're not automatically rushing off into distraction again and getting busy. You go into the kitchen to make breakfast, and it feels like you're just there in a relaxed, calm way, and you're very present for the experience of breakfast and preparing it, and it's calm, and maybe even the kitchen sparkles a little bit because you're paying attention. You know, you're there in a nice way. And so the awareness that gets kind of built up during meditation persists after meditation is over until you get caught up, and then maybe you start reading the news, and that's all it takes. And so awareness can become a strength. Awareness, when it has kind of a life of its own, it's there and present for you, available for you, without having to do a lot of work to make it there. It's just there as kind of a natural quality. And you have to protect it by not getting distracted. But it's kind of divine, and the stronger it becomes, it's kind of divine. It's a fantastic capacity. And then as we're becoming less and less distracted, what we're overcoming is being fragmented, being distracted. We're kind of beginning to kind of gather ourselves together and being kind of wholehearted in whatever we're doing, or just kind of complete in ourselves being here right now, which is samadhi, which is the what's called concentration in English, but samadhi. The state of being undistracted. It's such a beautiful feeling, like you can engage in washing your dishes and you're wholeheartedly, everything is there as if this is the only thing to do, the most valuable thing to do is to be there with doing the dishes. What a rare thing in many people in our distracted world we have. How many people do the dishes and will automatically turn on the radio, a TV show, in order to get input and get the latest news or get something going, and or automatically go into their mind and start going through the to-do list they're going to do and what they're worried about. And they're hardly present for the dishes. There's no samadhi of dishwashing. But there is dishwashing samadhi, which is such a pleasure. Wow, because the alternative is to be distracted. The alternative is to be fragmented and split between what we do. And so as we learn to be mindful, and the mindfulness is stronger, and we're choosing to be present more and more, there's a unification process that goes on. And we learn how beautiful it is. And it turns out that unified feeling of being fully present to what you're doing at the moment can be divine or spiritual. It's very just that is a spiritual state in Buddhism. And there, that can be a strength. Concentration can become so strong that it's actually hard to shake it off sometimes. And you carry it with you, more than just carrying calm with you. You carry with you a unified state as you go through your day. And then as you keep doing the mindfulness practice and you start seeing all these things, you start seeing what's wholesome and unwholesome mind streams, seeing that you have faith and confidence, seeing the strength of the mindfulness, seeing the strength of the unification, then there arises wisdom. And one of the key forms of wisdom is to really appreciate how valuable it is to make the choice to go in the wholesome direction and to avoid the unwholesome. You see how it benefits you. You see how much changes when you do that. You see how healthy it is. And so wisdom becomes stronger and stronger as well. And you see, have this wisdom that you bring with you everywhere and helps you to make these choices that keeps you these spiritual qualities present. So now I've gone through the five. So there's confidence, there's vitality, there is awareness, there's unification, and there's wisdom. These can be strengths that we carry with us. They're spiritual or divine qualities we come along. For the Buddha, these five qualities are part of the description of what changes in a person as they mature in the Buddhist practice. That these five qualities get stronger and stronger and stronger. Someone who's fully awakened has all these five qualities to the maximum strength possible. So if you want to know what's it like to be fully enlightened? They have fully strengthened faith, confidence, vitality, awareness, unification, and this wisdom factor. And the Buddha, he talks about these not so much something that you practice, but something that arises out of your practice. And this is what I was saying earlier. What's the best when's the best time to practice mindfulness? When it's the best, when should we practice mindfulness? When it's the best option. We start seeing that there are other options that are better than what we're doing. And one of them is to practice a mindfulness and awareness that begins allowing these five qualities to grow and develop and emerge. And as they're there, to establish ourselves in them, to recognize them and make room for them, to recognize them and kind of be in them and not to take them for granted, but to be present for it. So he doesn't say practice faith. He doesn't say practice vitality. He doesn't say practice awareness. He doesn't say practice unification or practice wisdom. We do Buddhist practice, the practice of recognizing what's happening in our mind stream, the practice of choosing what's healthy, making the effort to do so. We make the effort to let go of our distractions. There are things that we do, but there's also what is done to us when we do so. And these five spiritual qualities, powers, are these things that get born within us and grow and develop over time. And it's fantastic. So practice facilitates, practice supports the arising of these things. And they become, they represent or define or characterize some of the strong spiritual states that we can live in when we do Buddhist practice. I don't know if these five states are inspiring to you, but the alternative to those five hopefully is the opposite of inspiring. I mean, there's so many, to not have confidence, or worse, to have a lot of doubt about your abilities or about anything, to be caught up in, skepticism around it all. And it's, not so helpful. To not have vitality, but to actually be have your vitality drained, which so much of our society this day supports, and some of the ways in which we participate in our technology and our society and the beliefs and the politics and everything can be draining. And to not be aware, careful, you'll have an accident next time you drive your car. Or lots of accidents. All kinds of things happen when we're not aware. To not be unified, to be fragmented and broken and scattered, it's not good for us. And to not be wise, to be foolish, probably most of us don't want to be foolish. And it's usually not a useful thing to do. In Buddhism, there are no sinners in Buddhism. Some religions have these big, important, heavy categories, sinners and saints. The closest the Buddhism gets to it is there are fools. and then the wise people. So I don't know, you maybe still don't like those dichotomies, but the thing about being a fool is that you can still become wise. And whereas in some religions where the sin thing, a sinner, there's sometimes not much help. But we can always become wise in this practice. So so there's this wonderful term that I came up with that represents a very important concept in early Buddhism, but it's my translation, profound generative attention. Profound generative attention. There's a profound way of being present, really be present for our lives, mindful, aware, here, that allows the emergence, the generation of wonderful qualities within us, these divine things that can come. Somehow inside we have these capacities. And for the talk today, it's the five faculties, the five spiritual divine states, five strengths of confidence, vitality, awareness, unification, and wisdom. What a wonderful thing. And if these are there to support us, if we want them to support us, it's good to recognize them. And they're operating all the time. And the chances are that there's a lot of activities that you do in your daily life where these five are present. And I'd encourage you to consider where in your life these are operating, maybe unbeknownst to you. It could be that washing the dishes, you never thought that was a spiritual practice. But in fact, you have confidence that you can wash the dishes. You have confidence you can wash the dishes well, without breaking anything. You have confidence you can wash the dishes in such a way that it feels wonderful to have the wholeheartedness of just doing the dishes and not being distracted by 10,000 things while you do it. You have confidence for that. And you're willing to put effort into the dishes. Without some effort, dishes don't get done, don't get cleaned. So you are putting effort into it. But is the effort you're making, is it the best effort you can make? Is there beautiful effort? Is there vitality and way of washing dishes just inspires you? Or are you impatient? Is the idea to do dishes is to do them as quickly as you can, get it over, and you're kind of like, you know, multitasking and doing. But you know how, you know, what is it like to discover a nourishing effort in washing the dishes? What kind of awareness has to be present so you can do dishes that has this nourishing effort that comes with confidence? Is there any wholeheartedness that you can do the dishes with that is as wholehearted as doing activities that you love doing, that you do wholehearted because you love them and you're so interested? Can you give yourself over to something? That's one of the things I learned from Zen practice, being in the Zen monasteries. I learned this wonderful art of giving yourself wholeheartedly to whatever you're doing. And because I did that in the monastery sometimes, especially when I worked in the kitchen there, I would work in the kitchen for a couple of hours, and then I would go to meditate in the meditation hall. I just literally walked from the kitchen to the meditation hall and sat down. And because I did my kitchen work so wholeheartedly and just fully for the activity, when I sat down to meditate, I was already concentrated. And my mind was already undistracted. It was boom. It was fantastic. So to wash dishes with that wholeheartedness, and maybe some of you do it already, and then the wisdom to understand that it makes a difference how you wash dishes. If what you want is to evoke and live from a spiritual place and allow the spirituality to flow and move through you, the divine or these strengths to come through you, it makes a difference how you wash the dishes. And if it's true for dishes, it's probably true for a lot of things you do throughout the day, how you drive, how you speak with your friends, how you do your work, how you, you know, just you, probably pretty much everything. These five spiritual qualities are at play. And to recognize them, to learn to recognize them, learn to have them, make space for them, have them grow and develop, so that this profound, generative attention, which is attention that gives this profound generative capacity to do its work, that is not our doing. It's not like the ego that's making something, and we're allowing something profound within us to emerge. This is part of the gift of this practice. So I hope that made sense. And I hope even more than makes sense, I hope that this inspires you to explore what I've said today in your daily life and see if you can discover these five qualities in your meditation practice and your mindfulness practices that go through your day, but also in the activities of your day. Because if you do that in your life, daily life, then you don't have to go to a monastery like I did. So, thank you. So we have about 5 minutes before we stop and maybe get ready for the potluck. If any of you would like to ask a question or make a comment or a testimonial about this, please.
Hello, my name is Sol. I just have a question about being mindful, because throughout the day, I am sort of required to multitask a lot.
I didn't put my hearing aid in, so if you can lift it up this way. Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me
better? A little bit slower, yeah.
Okay, so for my job, I'm sort of required to multitask
yeah.
a lot. So like when I'm in the meeting, I'm supposed to answer Slack messages and read through emails. So this is kind of expected for my role. So yeah, I'm just wondering what's the best way to deal with so many inquiries throughout the day and making sure that I fulfill my work duties as well.
So I'm not sure what to say for you. So I what I say might be amiss, but what I learned was sometimes it's possible to multitask wonderfully. I was in the monastery. I was the dishwasher, and that for a lot of dishwashing machine, and it was like multitasking. You know, it was like a dance, spinning and turning and doing this and that. And what I learned, and then also worked as a fast order cook in a restaurant after the monastery, where I did multitasking galore. And what I learned was, don't have any resistance. Let go of the resistance. Let go of the, just give myself over to it completely. And so I don't know if that works for what you do, but just don't resist. You just give yourself fully to the multitasking you have to do, as if you're a soccer player who has to multitask, because on the field they have to pay attention to so much. So I don't know if this... Look at your resistance. That's what I did, and that's what I found, and letting go of my resistance.
Thank you.
Behind you.
Good morning, Gil. Good morning, everyone. I was wondering if you could speak to the process of feeling like you're really riding the wave of samadhi and these beautiful factors of awakening. And I always kind of think of it in my practice, like I'm surfing the wave and then I slip and life happens and I get caught in the wake and just beat up by the reef. Is this a common occurrence for other people's practice or of your own practice?
No, I didn't quite follow. So you have samadhi, you're caught the wave of samadhi, and then what comes along?
Maybe their own mind or life, and then you trip or hit something, and then you get caught up in the wave and tumbled up into
shore. Oh, you're tumbling at all.
Yeah.
Well, you just get it back on the surfboard and paddle out.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a very common occurrence for everybody else.
What else can you do?
That's it.
Well, there's one more. Something you can do that's important is, you tumble in, life comes over, you tumble in, and you lose your practice or your samadhi, your mindfulness. And certainly start again. But what you can also do, which is important, is to spend some time reflecting what happened and learn from that. And maybe there's things you need to learn. Maybe there's reasons why you get tumbling. Maybe it turns out the waves are kind of, mild. It's just that I'm not saying it's your situation, but someone keeps falling off their surfboard because of the waves, because they're trying to show off and to the people on the beach. And after they say, well, why do I keep falling off? What's going on? Oh, I'm not paying attention to the waves. I'm paying attention to the beautiful people on the beach. And so then we learn, okay, I have to stop paying attention to people on the beach. So you also want to learn. So the more you get tumbled around by life, the more useful is to step back and spend some time reflecting on it and see what happened there and what kind of changes, what is your contribution to that, and what kind of behavioral changes are needed. And if someone's always falling off their surfboard, into the waves, maybe what they need is a bigger surfboard. Or maybe they should stop surfing. The last one, please.
I find, when things are going easy, it comes natural to be mindful for me. But when I'm surrounded by, let's talk about like a political figure where there's hate, division, and all this stuff coming at me, or I see it written on Facebook or something, it's very hard for me to stay mindful. I don't know how to approach it. I want to, put some positive stuff out there, but then you're attacked.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to withdraw from this kind of hate.
So there's many things contribute to that, but based on the talk today, I'd like to say that it's because one reason why you get swept up in that is because you lack confidence in something healthy. If you lack confidence in something healthy, if you had confidence in love, no matter what, like love, there always has to be love. If there's not love, it's not worth it. And when there's all this hate and anger and fear making that comes from politicians, or when they're doing crazy making things, if you have confidence that love should always be in everything, then if you have confidence in that, then as you find yourself drifting off into being angry or upset, you, wait a minute, hold it. I really believe in love. That's really what's helpful. Or I really believe in peace. I really believe in non-reactivity. That's really where I want to be centered, come what may. I don't want to live in a world where I'm going to be triggered and lose my commitment to love, or lose my commitment to peace or to non-reactivity. So I would encourage you that what needs to happen is to reflect on the deepest values you have and find a way to have more confidence in them, so that when these things come to you, you're ready, because you're established in your confidence.
Wow. Thank you. Beautiful.
Okay, one more, then we'll stop.
So you started out by saying when you go into areas where you feel anger and negativity, to kind of say, is that the best option, or is that the best? So what do you do if you're going in a direction of anger and all these feelings come up? Like maybe it's a relationship with somebody and that, you know, they're powerful feelings.
And yeah, sure, absolutely. So that's a whole topic.
And I don't want to suppress them.
I mean,
it's not like, oh, somebody cut me off type of thing.
Yeah. So I think a huge part of mindfulness practice is, in fact, learning how to be present for difficult emotions and how to be present to them without further reactivity, and how to make space for them without giving in to them, without participating in them or acting through them. So if there's, sometimes you see that meditation is a fantastic place where the volcano of anger can flow. But you don't participate in it, you just allow it to flow. But be really honest to yourself. Just don't keep telling the stories of why you're angry. Don't review the stories. Just be present. Oh, this is anger. This is a volcano of energy. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. Let's feel it in the body. This is what's happening. Let me open in the body and feel all this, what's going on. This is what's happening. And so we start seeing more and more clearly what is happening as we're angry, and we're making space for it as we're angry. But in this posture of meditation, we're safe. We're not going to lash out at someone. We're not going to say something that we later regret. We're not going to hit someone, because you're not supposed to move when you meditate. And then as we do this and practice with this and be present for it, we start understanding more and more deeply what's going on and what are the inner triggers for us for this. And not a few people, for example, with anger, find out that the anger is really a surface phenomenon, a symptom of something deeper. And so then to be able to sit present and mindful and look and watch and observe our anger and start seeing in the cracks of it that actually I feel really hurt, or I feel really sad, that's more primary. And once we realize the sadness and the hurt, then it's a whole different game. And then that needs our attention too. And the fact that we are angry begins to recede, because it's not that important compared to something much more important. So mindfulness of emotions is a huge part of what we do in this practice here, and learning the instructions of it, learning how to be with it is one of the great gifts of this practice. And it's really essential, because of course, in this life that we live, we'll have all kinds of difficult emotions. And so the kind of confidence and vitality that I talked about today, the five faculties, that confidence gets and faith gets really strong when we learn how to be mindful and through these difficult mind states, difficult states of mind we can have. And we learn, oh, I don't have to give into it. I can allow for it. I can find a way through to the other side. Wow, this is fantastic. of course I'll choose to be mindful rather than go along with the anger or whatever it might be. Does that make enough sense? Great, thank you. Okay, so thank you all. And so we have this potluck. You're all welcome to come. And since we do have a potluck and it'll take a few minutes for some people to set up, maybe the setup people can go now. And those of you who want to stay, if you want to stay in here, and just turn to one or two people near you and say hello, because just to welcome them. And